a point to ponder, the devil's pawns. Why didn't they capture this poor, helpless Qasim? Why did they kill him? What did they want to destroy? They were pawns of the devil, who'd make evil seem good. They were puppets of Shaitan, whose souls made of wood. Their ancestors fought to keep Shirk alive, and when the Prophet's star rose, and theirs took a dive. Their tongues professed Islam with hearts stained by shirk. They held on to the shirk's culture and each sick mushrik kirk. That's how they came into power, and they intended to stay. They used deen for a platform, not a light for the day. When all will be judged by the all-seeing Lord, they saw deen as a weapon, a two-edged sword. They saw the household of Prophet as a block in their way. This chaste, righteous household can make people stray from the path of the rulers with their talk of doomsday and their slick talks on reason and justice and law. When they opened their mouths, folks listened in awe. Who can compete with the best of the best? So in order to put the whole issue to rest, they wanted Prophet's clan murdered or kept under duress to maintain their positions, which they stole to possess. They wanted to set an example for all Muslims to see how harshly they dealt with even their kin who turned enemy. They felt ruling by fear, nepotism, and greed would preserve their ascendance for the seed of Yazid. Most of the soldiers had no part in those kills, but they also were guilty because they just stood there and watched, thinking this was God's will. They knew who was Prophet and that these were his sons. They knew who was Yazid and what his people had done. They knew Abu Sufyan, and they knew about Hind. They knew about Muawiyah and his treasonous sin. They knew about heaven and they knew about hell, but they believed not in justice and how Shaitan fell. They knew better to bow behind a mean evil fool. They knew better to bow to a damned Shaitan's rule. But they bowed and agreed to be that damned devil's tool. And in a panic, they trampled the best boy and the school. This illegal government's band of gutless psychopaths continued assaulting the youth of Hussein and earning God's wrath. Muslim Ibn Aqil's pre-teenage son was shot with an arrow that pinned his hand to the top of his forehead by a so-called Muslim who followed a tyrant without question, and thus was misled. Then the small beardless child was impaled on a spear, grown men killing children without God-conscious fear. The three sons of Ja'far, who flies with two wings, were killed by these people in the name of their kings. The very same Ja'far who led the first immigration from Mecca to Ethiopia, a good Christian nation. The same Ja'far whose speech before the king of that land persuaded his highness to take a bold, kind, kingly stand and harbor these Muslims for as long as they willed. These Ja'far's sons, Abu Sufyan's sons, killed. One after one, time and again, the young boys of the household fought with grown men, knowing that they would be killed in the end. When Abbas saw that the end was quite near, he called on his brother to go forth with no fear. This stately young man, who had the same mother, loved Imam Hussein, their older half-brother, the water bearer. Abbas said, "O sons of my mother, it is time to go forth for the cause of our master. Let me see you stay true to Allah and his cause, and the Prophet Muhammad with no fear and no pause." Abdullah, Ja'far, and Uthman came forth to fight with grown-hearted men who were opposing the right. Each lad was cut down by a man twice his age and went on to glory to receive their just wage. Most of the males with Hussein were immature boys, but they faced death, pain, and slaughter for the hereafter's joys. These foolish tools of Shaitan weren't out just to murder Imam Hussein. They inflicted ordeals on the whole household to cause everyone pain. Why else did they bar the whole party from the great Euphrates? Why didn't they spare the weak instead of bringing to them slaughter? As the afternoon waned, the wee children were so hurt from lack of water that tiny little Sakina, Imam Hussein's little daughter, led 40 wee children to petition just for a drop of water. They approached their Uncle Abbas, and in one voice they pled, "We thirst, we thirst. Alatash, alatash. If this thirst gets much worse, we soon will be dead." Sakina stepped up to speak to Abbas. "Oh, uncle, isn't there something you can do? There's no moisture anywhere, not even any dew. If just one leather canteen for us you could fill, we could all wet our throats if it be Allah's will." Abbas was a champion warrior, but the sight of these innocent babies begging for water hurt him worse than their young heroes one by one tasting slaughter. So he picked up Sakina's water bag, at his sabr, and Prophet's battle flag. And with the Imam's sacred permission, charged straight for the river with just one ambition, to quench his favorite niece's and the other children's thirst, to fill that canteen before their thirst got much worse. Now those sick semi-mushriks could barely stand with the Hashemite youth. They were mowed down like grass by the great champion of truth. Abbas put a horrible hurt on those expendable pawns. They panicked and scattered, wanting just to be done. They were falling so fast, chaos swept through their ranks. In fear, they deserted the cool river banks, that very same river they had guarded for days. In fear of one man and the skill he displayed, Abbas filled his canteen. He was so keenly intent on quickly returning to the tents. After hearing those children's pitiful laments and observing from their features and that their deaths were imminent, that he would not relent to ease his own thirst's torment with one drop of water from the Euphrates' swift running torrent. He simply filled his canteen, jumped on his horse, aimed him at Sakina's tent, and spurred his charger to gallop at a flat-out sprint. This caused real concern to those impotent pawns of Yazid's illegal government. Those pitiful, incompetent pawns couldn't efficiently deal with Hussein's heroic contingent. When they were deprived of water and nourishment by these defenders of tyrannical devilment, what would it be like to cross swords with these suicidal zealots if Abbas' daring experiment actually did succeed and they were freed from thirst by one lone combatant? One lone combatant who managed to fetch water from the river that was blockaded by an entire mounted, well-armed regiment. If Abbas was allowed to achieve the superhuman accomplishment, it would be an empowering encouragement that would supplement the steel that was already a part of their most excellent warrior temperament. That illegal government's paid cowards never thought that the water was for the children's nourishment, so they swooped down to prevent this bold experiment from becoming a very dangerous embarrassment. This time they fought harder with more determination, but still they were entirely too incompetent to stand up to this Hashemite prince. And once again, a whole regiment fled from one man to escape his sword's terrible punishment. They fell back in fear and humiliating embarrassment, then sent for the archers to prevent this embarrassing development from turning into a rallying point that would make Hussein's men even more belligerent. Arrows came at Abbas from every direction. He turned and dashed towards the tents, using his body as the canteen's protection. He was seriously wounded, but he was intent on reaching the tents with the contents of that water bag intact. But when the tyrant's pawns saw Abbas' condition, they closed and attacked. They surrounded Abbas like a wolf pack surrounding a crippled old stag. They cut deep into his flesh and cut off the hand that held the Prophet's war flag. He saved the standard by trapping it between his body and the horse. And once again, he tried to maneuver to get back on his original course. But his mission of mercy was becoming harder to bring to reality. He was bleeding profusely from scores of wounds inflicted by the enemy. One hand was cut off already, and before he could compose himself, one of Yazid's minions, who was short on bravery, but not cunning in stealth, had concealed himself behind a sand dune. So when Abbas broke free from the wolves in a dazed semi-swoon, this master of treachery suddenly appeared and cut off his other hand. The sword in the hand lay in the hot desert sand. But the man still tried to finish the mission impossible that he gallantly began. With the water bag and the prophet's flag pressed between his body and the horse, he fought to remain conscious and to get back on course. But they surrounded him again, this time with impunity. A man with no hands guaranteed their immunity. They cut at him viciously, but he still tried to get free, to get that bag to the children with that life saving liquid energy. But it wasn't just his blood that he heard spilling on the sand. His canteen was pierced by one of the arrows shot by this mercenary band. So out flowed the hopes of the children and his bold, daring plan, the blood and the water, the life of the man. Abbas was now helpless, hopeless, and trapped. Both hands were cut off, all his energy sapped. Arrows protruded from all over his body, including an eye. It was clear to Abbas that soon he would die. Then one of his enemies delivered a crushing blow with a mace to his head. They left him writhing in pain and calling for Hussein, for they knew that in a few mighty Abbas would be dead. Hussein heard his half-brothers cry and rushed to arrive before he had died. There he lay, blood flowing from cuts everywhere, writhing in pain and gasping for air. Both hands cut off and an arrow in his eye, calling for God and Hussein and preparing to die. Hussein dropped his knees and sat. He cradled Abbas's bleeding head on his lap. Abbas could barely speak. Not only was he in excruciating pain and terribly weak, his breathing was labored and considerably faster. He managed to say, "Thank Allah you come, oh my master." And then with a great effort, he lifted his head off the lap of the man and laid it back down on the hot desert sand. He said, "O master, you will suffer much worse than before this day ends, and there will be no lap to lend before to you, comfort to you, not one of your friends. It is better that Abbas share with you this pillow of hot, dusty earth. Furthermore, you are my master. This pitiful slave is not worth the luxury of such an esteemed headrest." "This is good enough for Abbas. For me, this is the best." In between sobs and tears, Hussein made his last request from his brother, his champion, the best of the best. He said, "Oh, my most loyal friend, I am not just your master. I am your very close kin. You have called me master since you were a boy. Now it would please me and bring my heart joy if you would please call me brother just once before you part." Abbas whispered, my brother," with the last beating of his heart. Then he passed. Thus ended the life of this great personality, Abbas ibn Ali, a mythical hero that lived in reality. The epitome of chivalry, humility, and bravery, the enemy of tyrants and governmental slavery. Salawat. Matam.